right? And then all of a sudden, they rang the all clear. And I thought, well, gee whiz, you know, we're going full ahead and full stern. We must be dodging torpedoes. Why would they suddenly ring all clear with torpedoes all about us, you know? So I went up to the bridge wanting to give somebody the benefit of my opinion on this on this matter. And I found a very tense atmosphere. What had happened was that we'd had what we thought was a submarine contact, and it turned out to be a false one. But we'd chased it into the middle of the convoy. And then having got in the middle of the convoy, we were sort of being borne down upon by one merchant ship after another in the middle of the night. And so all this full ahead, full stern was to dodge one merchant ship out of the way of one, into the path of the other, and then out of the way of that one. And finally, the convoy, we passed right beyond us, and we ended up astern. And on the bridge was the most tense atmosphere that I have ever encountered, because this had been a bit of a faux pas on the part of the team that were on duty. But anyway, the incident had occurred just at the stroke of midnight, and the watch changed while all this was going on. But afterwards, I gather one ordinary seaman lookout came up to receive another ordinary seaman, relieve another ordinary seaman lookout. And in the midst of all this panic, he was heard to say in a loud voice, "Hey, you SOB, when are you going to give me back that book I left you?" So you can be completely detached in a real crisis.
Yeah, dear me. I gather the captain was not pleased.
The captain was not pleased about the book or the ordinary seaman or anything else, or the team that had been on duty and had got us into that mess. But we were damn lucky to escape with our hides, because it was a large convoy of, I suppose, 70 or 80 ships, and they get in the middle of that, with all the ships with their lights on at night. And in a storm, it wasn't pleasant at all.
Say not.
Another, just jumping around here a bit, I wanted to mention an observation of mine, and I guess it's well known to everybody, but the Navy has always had a little closer attachment, I think, to royalty than almost anyone else. And I suppose this is because of our Royal Navy heritage, and the fact that King George V was a sailor, King George VI was a sailor. The Mountbattens, who are cousins of royalty, were all sailors. Lord Leo Mountbatten's father, who was Admiral of the Fleet, first Sea Lord, and Lord Leo Mountbatten himself, and now Philip Mountbatten, is, and so on. But this seemed to work its way down. Navy always seemed to be being provided with opportunities to be invited to Government House in Ottawa, or Lieutenant Governor's residences in the various provincial capitals, and so was everyone else. But for some reason or other, Navy always regarded it as a right and a privilege, and wouldn't stay away for all the tea in China. I didn't discover until I became part of an integrated service that others didn't always look on it this way, that in my first year in the integrated service, I was told that I was one of those who was being required to go and call on the Governor General on New Year's Day, whereas up till that time, I wouldn't have thought of staying away. But I noticed that maybe 75% of the people weren't required to go and therefore didn't go. So there's a different attitude towards the royalty and the Governor General and the Lieutenant Governors and so on. I suppose the fact that we took them around occasionally in our ships and so on fostered this feeling. Anyway, I won't dwell on that anymore, but it's just an observation. Somewhat same with religion. Religion in the Navy was part of the Naval Service Act, I think. There were some words in the Act that said the captain shall cause the ship's company to worship Almighty God, and occasionally he ran across a CO who did just that. others let it slide a little bit, the same as religion has been let slide in a lot of other areas. One CO I served with, a marvelous man, now Rear Admiral Hugh Francis Pullen, retired. I served with him two or three times, but particularly for 2 years, or a year and a half, I guess, in HMCS Ontario. And he certainly caused the ship's company to worship Almighty God. Not only on Sunday, but every other day, too. And we had morning divisions every morning, divisions and prayers. And by divisions, I mean the whole ship's company fell in on the quarterdeck, and after being mustered and reported correct and so on, the Roman Catholic chaplain and the Protestant chaplain said prayers. But then, as an extension of the parade and the religion, Admiral Pullen also felt it his duty to read once every 3 months the Articles of War, which, as I recall, were part of the Naval Discipline Act. And these Articles of War, which I'm sure have now been amended drastically, were written in pretty tough, harsh language. And he would read a section of this every morning at divisions, or perhaps it was only on Sunday, I can't remember, but I think it was every morning, until he'd gone through the whole lot. And the ship's company would be falling in on the quarterdeck in some exotic place like Panama City or Fiji, and some people who'd partied rather well the night before couldn't quite remember just what they'd been up to. And all of a sudden they would hear this loud booming voice that would come out with an article which went something like this. Any man who shall disgrace his uniform by doing such and such shall suffer death or some lesser punishment, as in hereinafter mentioned. And Admiral Pullen had this loud booming voice, and he would always put the emphasis on the word death, and you'd see about 500 bodies all stiffen a little bit at this word death, and wondering just where they'd been the night before and whether this applied to them. At one time it was, I'm sure, a thing that was read to ships companies on all ships, but it was only in Ontario that I ever encountered it. And
were they not posted usually in a ship's company, in a frame with the pertinent part?
No, I don't think they were. No,
I ran across it once.
Yeah, they might be. The things that you saw posted in a frame, I think, were called the laws of the Navy, which were rather an informal and delightful thing, almost poetry. And I've forgotten, they're written by Captain somebody, and you used to be able to buy sets of these. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
No, maybe.
You
only saw it once, but I just wanted
to... Yeah, I guess, yes, now that you mention it, you're right. I think they were. They were on a great big poster affair, yeah. Mm-hmm. They were posted, now that you mentioned, but ignored, I think. But right. It wasn't until you had them sort of read out loud to you...
Sure, everybody knew about it.
That you knew about, yeah. just so much for that. I always was rather amused, and more amused every time I look back on this. It did us no harm at all, I don't think, to be exposed to the religion or the Articles of War or the parades or anything else. In fact, I think it was probably good for us.
Admiral Pullen wasn't one to let those things slide.
He wasn't about to let anything slide. Any tradition, he was going to stick with it as long as possible. Another item I just wanted to touch on briefly was, I personally thought when the integration was in the offing that the common uniform wouldn't be all that unpopular. I thought that it'd be a step in the direction of efficiency, and once people got used to the idea, they'd be just happy with the new common uniform as they were with the ones they had before. But now that we've seen integration and unification, I think about 14 years old, my own feeling from talking to people is that the attitude towards the separate uniforms is stronger than ever. And I believe now that there will never be total acceptance of a common uniform. I'm not quite so sure about air forces because they're a little bit different. In several countries, I think the Air Force does dress a bit like the Army. But the Army uniform and the Naval uniform are pretty internationally khaki for the Army and navy blue for the Navy. And I think people expect to see the ship's company of a ship dressed in blue or white in the tropics. And I think they expect to see soldiers dressed in khaki or something equivalent to it. And I don't believe that either the military people or, more importantly, the people outside of the military are ever going to be too wildly enthusiastic about a common uniform, whether it be green or blue or yellow or any other color. I don't think the color is the significant thing. But I think the attachment to the blue uniform by the sailors and the khaki uniform by the Army is just too strong to die out by legislation. I think it's something like you can legislate against sex, but you can never make it unpopular. And I think the same thing applies to uniforms. And finally, I guess the one thing that I have noticed, and that is that with the three services being in one, I don't detect anymore the same sort of family spirit that tended to exist within an individual service. And I don't mean just the people in the service, but once they left the service, they still belong very much to the one family. And I detect now that once people are out of the services, they're pretty well forgotten about. Those who are still serving aren't really thinking about them very much. Whereas at one time, any time there was a party or a major event or something special going on, you'd go out of your way to sort of see who there was around the town, who was retired but was associated with this, that, or the other thing, and invite them to come back and be part of the of activity. I know this still goes on, but I think to a much lesser extent. And I can just give you an example. I've just recently was traveling back to Victoria and arriving late at night, and who should be on the airplane arriving with me but I think the only living retired chief of the naval staff, and who was coming to Victoria to be presented with an honorary degree at a military college. And there was nobody at the airport to meet him or tell him where to go or to give him any advice or guidance. He hadn't been in Victoria for 15 or 20 years. That sort of thing, I think, is probably commonplace now. It was unheard of, I think, in my day that someone would invite a person of that stature to come to be present for an event without sort of looking after him from the time he left home until he got back there, type of thing, you know.
That surprises me. Yeah. That would happen, really. Almost just common courtesy would demand somebody do something about it.
Well, I think the responsibility is so divided, you know.
Who is
responsible for doing it, you know? And,
nobody was.
Nobody was, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think even the base commander and the admiral, you know, there are things in the command in the area which don't come under him and so on, you know. So the fact that retired chief of naval staff was coming to receive an honorary degree was not being done by his part of the command, and therefore it wouldn't have been his responsibility, I suppose. Anyway, I just put that as an example, but I feel that the family spirit of serving personnel and ex-service personnel as kind of continuing to belong is disappearing. And I think I see more of it now in civilian organizations than you see in the military. I think the people who spent their lives working for Imperial Oil have a much closer attachment to the to Imperial Oil than people who spent their lives working for the Navy now have to the what is left of the Navy.
I'm
talking about companies that have all been in business for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a very pleasant party about a month ago, which was put on by some people who had spent their lives working for the Bank of Montreal, and almost everybody else that was at the party had spent their life working for the Bank of Montreal, and a lot of others were still working there. But those Bank of Montreal serving people and ex-serving people seem to regard themselves as still part of a family, whereas I just don't see it. It's still there in the service, but it's disappearing.
It's not as strong. Yeah.
Not as strong as it was. Yeah.
Perhaps you think it's as strong in the so I say the lower ranks as it ever was, and not quite so strong in the upper ranks where you get more of an integrated final years of operation. In many cases.
Yes, it may be. It may be stronger in the lower ranks. I don't know. I suspect it isn't, though. I suspect that it's working its way down. Now, how much importance you put attached to this, I don't know. But
I think it
has an importance in this sense, that if all other things being equal, if you don't feel that anyone cares very much about you or isn't going to care very much about you a few years hence, you're not quite so inclined to stick with the outfit as you were when you knew that you'd be looked after even when it wasn't somebody's responsibility to look after you. I don't mean looked after, but just befriended and so on.
I heard some criticism of the present command structure in the forces, sort of leading off from the fact that this ex-CNS didn't show up at the... or it wasn't met.
Mm-hmm.
In that the new command structure entails a good deal of fragmented command, if you will. An officer be detailed to do one little part of a ceremony or a operation, and somebody else another little part, but there was no
overall
sort of
coordination and responsibility. Yeah, I think that's probably to a large extent the explanation of the thing.
This occurred actually, a case that I ran into a few years ago, it was in fact on the Maritime Commander's staff where it happened, and it just seemed to be part of this whole reorganization that the forces...
I think it is that responsibility is fragmented, and some of these things that I'm talking about are really just social responsibilities, and it's... I don't think you can legislate really social responsibilities, it just has to... come naturally.
It's a pity to see it go.
It's a pity to see it go. And I don't know. It may reappear as people get more used to the integrated service and this way of doing things. You may find that people are recruited into it, spend their life in it, and they develop this new attachment. But at the moment, all I can see is the old family association crumbling, and I don't see a new one growing up to replace it just yet, but perhaps it will. I don't know.
It may. It's hard to say. But I think perhaps the uniform will come back. Didn't the commission that Mr. McKinnon organized while he was in office to... didn't they recommend that a blue uniform and a
yes,
was
think,
shot down
I,
the
I think,
minister?
I think they did, and I think it was just unfortunate that it happened to be caught in the middle of an election, because it's one of these sort of unwritten laws that a new government never really implements the findings of an old one. And so I think that group of recommendations that were made, whether they be good or bad, had the kiss of death on them the moment the election was fought and won.
And somebody so unkindly said the new minister is an ex-Air Force type, so what can you expect? Which I think is rather unkind.
But I think one way or the other the uniform will come back, and I think the clamor for it will probably come from outside the services. It'll come from the civilian population, I think, and to a large extent. Or if not from the civilian population, from paramilitary sort of bodies or...
The Naval Officers Association, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the association.
Naval League of Canada.
Yeah, that sort of thing, And and they in turn will have, some fairly important backing.
But
I think if I just mention one thing, I think probably 90% of the reason why we didn't go back, reverse direction on the uniform was the sheer cost of it. Once you commit yourself to outfitting 80 or 100,000 people with a green uniform, and then you want to switch that to something else, it's an awful lot of uniforms to be scrapped.
Or part of it,
And the bigger the single force becomes, the more costly any change is that affects the whole force. Whereas it used to be that the change affected only a few people, and therefore the cost could be absorbed. So I think on a sheer cost basis, you'll always have the Treasury people and so on fighting you on some of these things. But what they may do is may go the course of making it voluntary, and then after it's been voluntary for a number of years, make it compulsory and so on. For example, purchasing of swords and things like that in the military. For years it was voluntary, and then eventually they made them mandatory. And same with mess kits and so on. They never really bought them for you, but somehow or other they made the uniform allowance a little more generous so that you could buy them, and then when it was generous enough that you could buy a uniform, even though you couldn't begin to pay for the total cost of it, then they began to legislate, well, now we'll have functions where everybody will show up in mess kit. So you may have that sort of an evolutionary process develop. People who like blue uniforms or something can buy them if they wish, and they'll be allowed to wear them on certain occasions, and then eventually...
It may work that way.
But I can't see the Treasury Board just agreeing overnight to scrapping hundreds of thousands of green uniforms in favor of some other color.
I don't know whether the Army is so upset about the green as the Navy, but because it's not far off, but they're...
Mind you, the green uniform looks a bit more like an Army uniform than it does anything else, and so maybe it has that in its favor. I didn't mean, I guess, to imply that the Army were terribly upset about the uniform. It was more that I think people were used to seeing the Army in khaki.
Yeah.
I think if you saw an Army dressed in dark blue, you'd begin to wonder.
I wouldn't suspect that anybody else but the Navy would go into dark blue. I would hope not. It would be. I think maybe it will come. It seems to be trending that way.
Yeah.
And let's hope it does work out.
Those were the sort of general points that I thought I'd like to make just to close this off. Thank you very much for your patience and. The several postponements we've had in this discussion.
Well, thank you for your information, because it's not, sort of thing is not available. Not too many Commodore E around there, the old designation, and it's it was very good to get this aspect on the.
I guess there's only two Commodore Z around. Maybe three. Commodore Winnett lives here in Victoria.
I know what
myself it. And. Commodore Henning, who was an engineer but transferred to ordnance.
I know what I wanted to say. The Naval Officers Association, it's still keeping on and taking in people from the now integrated services, or former members of the sea element.
Yes, it is. Yes.
So
I'm not just sure how they define the the requirements or whether they bother to define them very closely, but certainly they're taking people in. Yeah.
So that way it's still going
that,
on.
That is still going on, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. And very kind.